The following podcast is part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network.
Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
How so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and relove our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit. Or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at IKEA-USA.com/circular. Visit IKEA-USA.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
Did you know Bridgestone developed a tire using 75% recycled and renewable materials? Making a difference today for future generations. That's what really matters. Bridgestone, solutions for your journey. Visit whatreallymatters.com to learn more.
I had just arrived in London at 18 and spotted this movie marquee, Meetings with Remarkable Men. The film was about the philosopher Gurdjieff, but it was the title that spoke to me. I wanted to know people like that, people changing the world by the way they lived. I've sought them out ever since, and now we'll hear from many of them on the Victoria Moran podcast, Meetings with Remarkable Women.
Welcome to the podcast. Your host, Victoria Moran, author of Creating a Charmed Life, Younger by the Day, and Main Street Vegan, invites you to conversations designed to help you thrive in your body, cozy up to your soul, and use your unique gifts to change the world. Now, here's Victoria.
Don't you love knowing people when? When they were as talented, gifted, and magnificent as they are now, but not a little people knew it then. And later, being there when those talents and gifts and magnificence get the credit they deserve. That's what this episode is about for me. The chance to talk with someone I've adored for several years now, and her creativity and her writing and the way she sees things have led to something really, really big. So stay tuned for movie stars and teenage cannibals and animal rights and the writer's life. I think we're gonna love this. Hi, everybody. I'm Victoria Moran, and welcome to the podcast where I do share meetings with remarkable women. Somebody was telling me the other day about all kinds of great people that she knows and could connect me with, and that'll be wonderful 5 or 6 or 10 years from now. But right now, there are just so many remarkable women in my world that I am thrilled to death to share every single one of them with you. Maybe a reminder of some of the remarkable women and remarkable other gendered people who are in your world. And today we are going to be speaking with somebody really special. She is Camille DeAngelis, the author of several novels full of impossible things, a travel guide to Ireland, a book of nonfiction called Life Without Envy, Ego Management for Creative People, and another book on creativity called A Bright, Clean Mind, Veganism for Creative Transformation. And that's actually how I got to know Camille. She attended Main Street Vegan Academy in 2013. Her young adult novel, Bones and All, won an Alex Award from the American Library Association in 2016. And in 2022, coming right up, the feature film, Bones and All, will be debuting in the US and I believe around the world just in time for us over here anyway for Thanksgiving. Welcome, Camille DeAngelis.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Victoria. It's always such a pleasure to be with you.
Well, that goes both ways. And I am just so, so proud of you. I've said to a lot of people that I don't have grandchildren, but I have Main Street Vegan Academy graduates, and I get to brag about them and share about them. And it is just so wonderful. And you are a writer's writer. So before we get into the movie and all the hoopla and what's going on now, Just introduce us to Camille DeAngelis, the writer.
Oh my gosh. Well, where do I begin? So yeah, that I, you know, talking about writing impossible things, that's kind of all I'm interested in writing about fiction wise. Cause I've always said I get enough real life in real life. So at the moment I am working on a time travel screwball comedy in which most of my characters are vegan, which has been so much fun. Inventing a lot of recipes for my vegan matriarch to cook, which has been so fun. And also, as is my wont, getting inspiration from vintage cookbooks, of course. So yeah, that's what I'm working on at the moment. And I've got the, you know, the movie stuff is kind of, you know, happening very excitedly in the background. I mean, it's not in the background, you know, as far as most people can see, because my friend texted me the other day and said she saw an ad for the movie on a bus in LA. And she said, I wasn't going to take a picture. I wanted to take a picture of it. Couldn't take a picture of it because I was driving. I said, thank you for driving safely. But there's been so much more excitement than I had anticipated, you know, all the way back. I mean, Victoria, you and I go back to, well, you didn't know it, I don't think, but we, as far as I'm concerned, we go back to Veg Fest, New York City Veg Fest 2011, when I heard you speak and you changed my life because you were only just starting Main Street Vegan Academy. And as you were speaking about it, I thought, I have to do that program. And it was one of the best decisions I ever made. And so I know I'm getting a little off topic here, but my point was that this film has been in the works since 2015. So, and you had me on your show back when it came out, and it's so much, so satisfying to see, you know, all of the wonderful things that have happened in the meantime.
Well, wondrous things happen every day. I think the more we look for the wonders, we see the wonders. Absolutely. And you have a lot of terrific novels that are just incredible reads. One of your novels that I really, really enjoyed is The Boy from Tomorrow. Now, you're supposedly a young adult author. I am not a young adult, but I just love reading everything that you write. And so maybe that one could have been your big first feature film, but instead it's Bones and All, which is also a great read. And yet somebody read it who thought that it needed to be on the big screen. So tell us about that process and just about the feelings from 2015 to now. There must have been plenty of them.
Yes, yes. So let's see, the book came out in March 2015, and it was a few months after that, it was like June, I think, my agent got a call from actually another literary agent who was also a film producer. Her name is Teresa Park. I like to call her my fairy godmother because without her, this movie would not have happened. She's the acquiring producer. So yeah, she bought the film option. And you know, anyone who wants to see behind the curtain or who is an aspiring author themselves, you probably have heard, and this is usually the case, that when you get this film option, it's best to look at it as free money. don't pin your hopes on this movie ever actually getting made, right? That's what is realistic. And so that was my attitude for the first several years. Every 18 months, there was an option renewal. So it was a little bit of extra income for, you know, a writer who was cobbling together, you know, a whole bunch of odd jobs. And so that was the way things were until, let's see, early 2021. When I was, this is so funny, I will never forget this moment because it was such an ordinary moment to have had this enormous news dropping into my lap, or, you know, onto my phone, as it were. So I was in the checkout line at Whole Foods with my then little less than 2 years old niece, who's in her stroller. I had my Miyoko's cheese and some, you know, herb crackers, which she was clamoring for. And I get this text from my agent saying that, you know, all of these names attached to this film project and it's going ahead. And it's funny because there has since been a deadline interview that was deadline.com article that was published, an interview with the director, Luca Guadagnino. And that filled in a bunch of the late 2020 timeline for me, because I had no idea, because they're not going to tell you, you know, what might happen or we're working on it. That's, you know, that they don't want to, you know, come back to you with updates that don't really feel like, you know, substantive updates. So I had no idea until that day in late January, 2021. And even after I got back on the phone with Teresa, you know, after periodic phone calls over the years. And, and I should say that Dave Kajanik, the screenwriter, was on board the year after Teresa purchased the option. And he and I have had a wonderful working relationship, which has mostly consisted of my, you know, just giving him a little bit of input and basically telling him that I thought that the vegan subtext was way too subtle, which it is. And that's the only thing that I was looking for in the film adaptation. And he being such a sensitive, wonderful writer, full of integrity, very sincere, one of the most sincere people I've ever met, which, you know, we're talking about Hollywood people here. I mean, this is just, it has been such a wonderful, wonderful experience for me from start to finish. But anyway, so as far as I knew, Dave had finished a draft of the script, but that was all I knew. And so it was nice to read that deadline article, which I think was published in August, that kind of filled in all of that second half of 2020 timeline so that I can see how we got from actually losing the original director to having the whole cast assembled basically and ready to go. Oh, but what I was going to say is that Teresa said, I'll never forget, she said soon after the news broke, this still could all go up in a puff of smoke. which again, I think this is the way films get made. Sometimes they don't get made.
Oh my goodness. I love it how you said it was such a great experience, because I think for a lot of people, it would just be so nerve-wracking. But one of the reasons I'm guessing, knowing you, Camille, and why you had your wits about you, well, one of those things is you have a spiritual life. You're a yogi of real standing. And you're also a real writer. And so am I right that had this not happened, you would have just said, okay, I keep writing?
Yes, absolutely. And you mentioned my book, Life Without Envy, Ego Management for Creative People. I put a whole lot of inner work into that book. I mean, that book was the result of years of inner work, because I started out, wasn't going to tell you this in the intro, introducing myself as a writer, but, you know, it was a lot of ups and downs, and I'm sure there will still be, you know, ups and downs in my future. That's just the life that I chose, and it's inevitable. But my first couple novels, like I lost my publisher. Second novel went out of print, and at this point I'm in my early 30s, and actually, probably not coincidentally, had fallen away from my yoga practice. Practiced in my early 20s, and I fell away from it for a while. Resumed in my early 30s, and also not a coincidence, resuming around the same time that I'm doing all of the important inner work, where I'm shifting from the why hasn't it happened for me, and why am I out of print, and this isn't fair, to making a contribution, seeing my work as part of something bigger than myself. And so that wonderful shift happened. And I realized that I had to write the book that I would have most needed and wanted to read several years before. And so having done all of that work, all this movie stuff has not changed my life, except in a financial sense. That is the only sense that it has changed my life, because I, no matter what status I'm in with each book, you know, I have still a bunch of my books are still out of print. They haven't come back into print. And I'm still not a New York Times bestselling author. And people are surprised to hear that. They just assume that I'm, you know, that I've been on the New York Times bestseller list. It still hasn't happened. And you know what? It doesn't really matter to me much one way or the other. I mean, yeah, it would be nice to, you know, have that income and to have that reach and to have so many people reading my work. But it's also really important for me to write the books that I feel most called to tell, the stories that I feel most called to tell. And that's not always going to dovetail with what the market is looking for. And so I guess that's what you mean when you say that I'm a writer's writer, is that I'm not one of those writers who, and I'm not knocking anyone who writes for the market. I'm absolutely not. I'm just saying that I am incapable of doing that.
And yet sometimes they merge and you're going for your soul's purpose and the market wants it too. And that's certainly what's happening now with Bones and All. So first tell us about the book, and then you can let us in on the movie and who's in it and all that Hollywood stuff.
Yeah. So let's see. So there were several things that came together to give me the idea to write a teen cannibal road trip novel. And, you know, one of them, one of the inputs, I call them, that, you know, the idea gathers itself. And this was one of the inputs that went into the pot, was an 18th century Scottish cookbook called Cookery and Pastry, written by Susanna MacIver, who was a cooking teacher. She would have young wives come to her flat in Old Town Edinburgh, and she would teach them how to cook. This was in like the 1770s. And so I was researching a historical fantasy novel, which I've still not written, but I will. It's my next adult project after the time travel novel. And I was flipping through her, the table of contents, and there was a subheading that said flesh. And, you know, I was just, ooh, you know, and at this point I had been vegan for a year or two, and I was just so relieved. I was like, I will never be a flesh eater again. And that sense of like mingled relief and horror, that definitely went into the pot. There's a very funny, there's a comedy, TV show that was on, over a decade now, called Flight of the Conchords. They had a, basically like a cannibal sea shanty, or it was narrated, or the song is narrated by the victim, the, you know, intended victim, which is very funny. And so that went into the pot, and, you know, a whole lot of other influences were mingling there. And, then I started hearing my protagonist, speaking to me in the shower. Which I mentioned that when I first met Taylor Russell, who is the star of the movie, and her eyes kind of went wide and she was like, whoa, you know, this is pretty intense. And so I alternated, you mentioned The Boy from Tomorrow. So I went back and forth between writing that book, which is the book of my heart, which is basically Tom's Midnight Garden fan fiction. it's about a, it's about a friendship that forms between two 12-year-olds who are living in the same house 100 years apart, who meet through a hand-painted spirit board and form a friendship across time, across the century that separates them. And so that was my cozy fantasy read, which is, that's what I prefer to write. I don't consider myself a writer of horror. Definitely my work is tinged with the gothic, but not horror. This is definitely the odd book out in my body of work. And so I was going back and forth between, for 2 years, this is 2011 and 2012, I was going back and forth between writing The Boy from Tomorrow and Bones and All. and got to the point where, you know, finished the book of my heart. And then I went back to the book that I felt like I needed to exorcise. And yeah, so let's see. Actually had a way easier time selling Bones and All, which was strange to me because, and this is funny, we laugh about this now, but initially when I pitched the idea to my agent, she was horrified. She was like, this is a terrible idea, but she didn't tell me that. And I only found out when I was hopping on a call with her and Teresa, and who you will recall is the acquiring producer. So we were talking about, you know, film, you know, any progress that had been made with the film. And I am too polite when I just can't interrupt people. And so they were mid conversation when I hopped on the call, and there wasn't like a chime to let them know that I had joined the call. And so my agent was telling her that, you know, confessing to her that she thought that, that it was a terrible idea. And I think that's hilarious because, you know, my agent trusts me to do my work. You know, she does her job, I do mine. And so that was actually a really, really wonderful anecdote that I have now. That shows that she, you know, trusted me to do what I do best. So, yeah. So the Hollywood stuff, you want to hear about the Hollywood stuff?
But of course.
Yeah. And you know what I love about this is that like, we're so far from Hollywood because the film, it was filmed exclusively in the Midwest. The production office was in Cincinnati, Ohio. And it was, going on set was just such an incredible experience. There were, you know, 150 people there, all doing what they do best. You know, I love being around people who do what they do best, because that's what I'm trying to do too. And so I got to meet Taylor and a lot of the other, you know, main characters in the film who, you know, this is an interesting film because it is a road trip. You're seeing a lot of these amazing, amazing actors. You're only seeing them in one scene. And then my protagonist, Marin, and her friend slash love interest, Lee, they're on to the next town and on to the next misadventure, shall we say. And so, but I did get to meet Taylor, had some lovely conversations with her. And everyone was just like, it seemed like they were really enjoying the experience of making this film. And it was nice to be in. So I didn't have the Hollywood experience. It was these folks had come together to make this film through Luca's vision. And the way that he makes films is pretty like he doesn't go through the studio system. He has basically a team of investors who believe in his work so passionately that whatever movie he wants to make, they will finance it for him. And so he's able to make exactly the movie he wants to make. Because you hear, this is what you hear about Hollywood, is that these studios, you know, all the executives are putting their oar in, as they say, and, you know, like, well, we want this and we want that. And then, you know, before you know it, the movie that you're making is not the movie that you wanted to make. And Luca's been able to circumvent that whole process, and he made exactly the movie he wanted to make. And I know everyone is really, really happy with how it turned out. I'm thrilled with how it turned out. There have been so many changes made, and, you know, folks kind of assume that I wouldn't be happy to see the changes, but actually it's, there's no better compliment than to see this team who are so enthusiastic about your story that they want to continue building it out and adding new dimensions and seeing like, oh, what, you know, what happens if we send our young lovers this way instead of that way? And that's so, so gratifying for me. It was an exhilarating experience, really, to see, you know, not just, you know, lines of dialogue that I had come up with. Although Dave and I would have a moment where he would be like, wait, is that my line or yours? And, I think I've gone a bit off the rails here, Victoria.
Oh no, it's just wonderful to hear, because this is a world that many of us will never enter, and to hear about it is really fascinating. So Taylor Russell is the star. Timothy mm-hmm. Chalamet is her love interest, mm-hmm. and they're very hot young performers right now. Did you ever imagine your characters in those guises?
No, definitely not. I mean, I, you know, to kind of circle back to the idea of like, you never expect that the film's actually going to get made. I thought that if it did get made, that it would be, you know, small budget. This is like, I guess it was a relatively small budget. I'm not sure. But campy. It was like, I had it in my head that that was probably how the film would get made, that it would be sort of a, there was a movie that came out in like 2007 or 2008 called Teeth, which is very good for what it is, for what it, you know, what it intended to be. At least I remember enjoying it. And that's a horror film about vagina dentata. It was very, it was pretty campy. And so it never in a million years occurred to me that this movie could get the, that it could get that treatment of, you know, this is an art house film. Every single detail is, I mean, down to the, just the tiniest micro details that you're never going to notice, you know, going to the theater to see this film. I mean, maybe if you see it, I mean, I've seen it in the theater, I think 4 times now. And I was only just noticing these tiny details because Dave pointed them out to me, in between the 3rd and 4th viewing. But that's the level of care and attention to detail and passion that goes into this level, this echelon of filmmaking. And it never in a million years occurred to me that, you know, the Bones and All would be made at that level.
Well, you deserve that because that's the level of author that you are. It's the level of writer that you are. So it should be the level of film that this is. So congratulations, and you deserve it.
Thank you so much.
Tell us, Camille, about the vegan part. It is very subtle in the book. If I hadn't known you, I'm not even sure I would have gotten it. But once I knew to look for it, it's like, oh my gosh, this is a vegan novel. Tell us about that.
Yeah. Well, my intention was to, of course, to get readers rethinking the whole idea of eating flesh. And so, you know, of course, the first thing that someone will say to me when I, because this happened, I was at the Refocus Film Festival in Iowa City last month. And, you know, someone, of course, came up to me because I talked about Susanna MacIver's cookbook, the moment of seeing the flesh subheading and being horrified. And so he came up to me and he said, well, that's not a cookbook for human flesh. And I said, no, but either way, you're eating a being who did not want to die. And he was quiet for a second. He was like, oh, I never thought of it like that. And who knows? I mean, he may push that aside and never think of it again, but I hope that he will consider it, you know, the next time he's out at a restaurant or at the grocery store. And, you know, once you've trained yourself, as you well know, you know, you can't go back. You can't go back to seeing, you know, inanimate, you know, pieces of meat. It's not meat, it's flesh to you, you know? And so I wanted to inspire that disgust and, you know, get the gears turning, get the connections made. You know, I always, it's either a magic eye. I like to, my analogies of the magic eye or the connect the dots images, you know, getting folks to begin to connect those dots and to see the cognitive dissonance and, you know, eventually to begin to deprogram themselves. Because this work is never done. You know, you're always, you know, kind of taking a pause and thinking like when you say something, you're like, why did I say that? Or someone is saying something to you and you think, you know, there's all of this, the preconceptions and attitudes that are encoded in everything we say and think. And so much of it is deeply, deeply hurtful and traumatizing. And, you know, to all, you know, kinds of vulnerable folks, human folks and non-human folks. And so that's the journey that I've been on. for, you know, almost as long as you've known me. Man, we've been vegetarian for a long time before that, but, you know, as one of those folks who was vegetarian for 10 years. And then I finally had my vegan epiphany, my light bulb moment. And so, yeah, I hope that readers will, now that there is more of a, like, I have a very, very free, I mean, I think I only got one reader sending me a message after the book originally came out to say, I get it, I'm vegan now. And now this is happening a little more frequently. So I did get an email a couple days ago from someone who was already vegetarian and is now like, I'm, you know, you've convinced me, which is wonderful. And I hope that trend will continue.
Oh, well, I'm sure it will. And it might have a great big boost round about November 23rd. What happens then?
The movie will be out in the US. I believe I think the film will begin playing in, you know, as they say, like, you know, select locations nationwide, but then it opens wide on Wednesday, November 23rd, which in the US is the day before Thanksgiving, or as we vegans often like to say, Thanksgiving.
So was that on purpose, that it would premiere just before this big holiday when most people choose not to be vegan or vegetarian?
If I had to guess, I would say no, that it had nothing to do with it. I think it's a big weekend for movie going because, you know, folks are at home with their families and, you know, searching for something fun to do outside the house, you know, having spent so much time, you know, eating and lounging around. And so I think it's a natural time to have a movie that's getting some Oscar buzz, which again, blows my mind, to have a movie release at that time of year.
It's stunning. It's absolutely magnificent. And I'm thinking about getting a group of vegans together, maybe Main Street Vegan Academy graduates here in New York City, or maybe a bigger group. And we would all go to see that on the evening of the 23rd. So if anybody's listening who's in New York City who knows me, be in touch and join the group. And we'll just have a big old caravan to some theater and watch Bones and All. And
that'll be so fun.
For the writer of the book, let's just take a minute to thank all writers of all books, because it's not easy to write a book. And when one is out there, it can change the world.
This episode is brought to you by CarMax. CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because CarMax believes you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car they sell has CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure, with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive. CarMax, the way car buying should be. Start shopping now at CarMax.com.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
So, Camille, I am interested in this concept of ego management for creative people, the subtitle of one of your nonfiction books, in the connection that your baby, your book, Bones and All, was turned over to a screenwriter that until you knew him, you didn't know him. How was that?
Yeah, so I know more now than I knew at the time, because I didn't realize that Teresa didn't actually know Dave yet. And so Dave was taken completely by surprise when she approached him. because she said, I think that you are the perfect person to write this. And his initial thought was, you know, yeah, I really enjoyed this book. I see myself in this young girl, this protagonist, but that doesn't mean that I'm the right person to write this screenplay. And which to me, that alone says volumes about how much integrity this man has, right? So in our first call, he said, what do you think? Because he wasn't convinced that he wasn't sure that he was the right person, even though he really, really resonated with the material. So he said, what are your thoughts about the prospect of two male filmmakers making this feminist novel? And my first thought was, okay, I could be cynical here and say that this is lip service. I don't know him, but I had an intuition that, and which, you know, turned out to be absolutely correct, that, you know, as I say, he's a man of deep integrity, and that he was in earnest, and he was. And so I said, it's the most important thing to me is that you care enough to ask that question. And we have since, you know, become very good friends. We're just, I mean, I called him my soul brother. We're just on the same page about everything. I've enjoyed all the quality time I've been able to spend with him in Venice. I got to go to Venice to the film festival. We spent some quality time there, and you're just talking about books and writing and about our, you know, respective trajectories. And, you know, and family and, you know, all of the big stuff, all the important stuff. And so that was how it started with Dave. And then we had another call, and I had already said, because they don't want you to be involved, right? Because it makes their job easier. And like, unless you are a bona fide screenwriter, which I am not, I have no interest. I would rather be writing my next novel. And so it's very simple for me, very cut and dry, partly because I have a dear friend who really got burned with all this Hollywood nonsense. And he is a screenwriter. And of course, you know, he has persevered and has done well, but I did not want to get caught up in all of that. So it was just a very cut and dry decision for me. And so we had a call, and once we had decided that, you know, Dave was the person to take on this project, and then he eventually became one of the executive producers as well. He asked me, you know, thematically, like what was the most important thing? And he was expecting me to talk about feminism. And I said, well, you know, and you know, veganism and feminism are all tied up together. But when I started talking about animal rights and how, you know, the subtext was way too subtle, and that was my regret, you know, looking back on publishing that novel, he was taken aback, but he was game. He was up for the challenge, and he thought a lot about it. And, you know, you can tell, if you ever get the chance to read the script, it's a wonderful script. He's such a thoughtful, careful, wise, and empathetic writer. And so I really, like, out of every screenwriter in Hollywood, I could have, you know, possibly, you know, handed my source material off to, I feel so, so, so blessed that it was him.
And you deserve nothing less. You're such an amazing person and such a true person that it just makes sense. You should have the fabulous karma of working with amazing people and having someone who would understand your real mission. So I know that you said in the novel that you're working on now, characters are vegan. Mm-hmm. And there does seem to be happening just in the past few years, a kind of genre of vegan novels. So how can we have those and love them and enjoy them without getting too much into the preachy part so that only vegans want to read them?
Right. Well, it's such a good question, because I was afraid of that, right? So that's why, you know, in The Boy from Tomorrow, Alec and his mom, Alec is in the present day, you know, living in the house in the present day, He and his mom have recently become vegan. And so I mentioned that he gets made fun of by one of his classmates, but I leave it at that. And so I think at one point I mentioned that the tutor, the live-in tutor, Emily, who tutors the girls, Josie and Cass, that she's reading The Jungle by Upton Sinclair. And so that was as comfortable as I felt slipping it in there. And with the time travel novel, this is a character who is a side character in my debut novel, Mary Modern, which came out in 2007. So that's 4 years. So I was writing this, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, maybe before I actually went vegan in 2011. And so I'm writing this character who at the time never thought about what, you know, what this man's dietary, you know, habits were. I hadn't, you know, fleshed him out that, you know, to that extent yet. But I went back and thought, I knew that as a time traveler, I knew he was a time traveling physicist. I knew that he was going to have his own book. And because I knew so little about him, actually, I was able to develop his character in a direction that I couldn't have anticipated back when I had first conceived of him. And so it's actually come out pretty organically. Like, I think it needs to happen organically as you are doing the work of character development. And, you know, yeah, I have my... I told my agent I wanted to write a gleeful novel about the end of the world, you know, the heat death of the universe. And, you know, long before that, you know, we are probably going to render ourselves extinct with the way things are going. I didn't know if I could write an optimistic novel, a comedy about climate change and all of the other problems that we're facing, but I wanted to give it my best try. And so far I'm having a lot of fun with it. And I hope that shows up on the page. The first section of the manuscript is with my agent right now. So hopefully she will, if not agree with me, she will have some ideas as to how I can get it there. But yeah, I mean, that's the first thing that I would say is to have an organic process about it, as opposed to, having the moral of the beginning with the moral of the story. I don't always begin with character. I sometimes begin with premise, but the premise is very, very surface level. And then there's the deep work of character development, the adding layers and layers and layers, and who we are as vegans and animal rights activists, that shows up at some point, you know, if that's the direction that your characters are, you know, heading in. And yeah, I'm sorry. I don't feel like that's a satisfying answer.
No, I think it's a terrific answer. And I love hearing you and other fiction authors talk about their characters as if they were people you had lunch with last week.
Absolutely. Yeah. I always see them that way. I live with them. I think about them. They are, it's part of what gives my life so much flavor and color. I feel like I get to live an infinite number of lives through my characters, which is just, you know, I am so excited to wake up every morning so I can see what they're going to do next.
Oh my goodness. That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Well, now let's talk about your one and only life as Camille DeAngelis. Mm-hmm. You are a remarkable woman. That's what this podcast is about. So tell us about your daily life. People always like to know how other people live, and particularly writers, because writers are a little bit of an odd crew. So how do you navigate the world in the day-to-day?
Yeah, well, I'm in among the odd crew. I feel like I'm even odder. I'm the odd duck in a group of odd ducks, I think, because I have sort of, I've arranged my life in a way that, you know, it's just the way things turned out. I am kind of living the fun, funky, spinsterly aunt lifestyle, because I moved down here to Washington, D.C. Summer of 2020, because I realized that I just wanted to be close to my sister and her family. So my niece is now 3.5, and she's, you know, alternately a delight and a terror, but, you know, 87% a delight. So we'll take it. I love her fiercely. And I spend a lot of time with her, a lot of time with my quality time with my sister and brother-in-law and the rest of the family. And so my life is, you know, I live in an apartment that's very close to that, not very close, but 15-minute walk. So it's just far enough away that I'm doing my own thing over here in the adjoining neighborhood. And I'm living alone for the first time in my life. I'd always had roommates. And so I really, you know, love my apartment, love where I live, love my neighbors, making, you know, friends in the veg society down here. And, you know, it's a life that is very conducive to getting a whole lot of creative work done. And I feel very, 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 very grateful, that things have, you know, kind of fallen out this way, at least for now. I'm sure that, you know, things are never forever, you know, things get, you know, rearranged, like furniture, you know. Maybe I'll meet my vegan boyfriend at some point in the near future. But if not, life is still totally sweet.
Well, that is a beautiful description. Now, can I ask you to just zero in on it even more and talk to us about what you do when you get up and as you go through your day, where the writing fits into that? And just anything else that is quirky and fabulous so that we can know you.
Yeah. Well, I'm sitting here chatting with you, I'm looking at my grandparents' antique sofa that they bought when they married in 1950, which I always want to talk about this sofa because it is the physical reminder of my ancestry and all of the love in my family, and having this reminder of their love, even though they're gone. And so I recently got this wonderful old sofa with lions carved on the arms, got it reupholstered. And so this is where I joke that this is my office. The sofa is my office. And so I've been doing a lot of writing and revising on that sofa. And let's see, always with a cup of coffee with soy creamer. And, you know, as you said, I, you know, practice yoga every day. I'm using the Om Stars platform. I, you know, switched to remote classes, well, using YouTube mostly after, you know, after COVID. And I haven't actually been inside a studio since COVID. But, you know, at some point, someday I will. But yeah, it's the, you know, daily yoga practice, which I'm always trying to listen to my body to see what my body needs. And so when I'm in winter mode, I'm always doing yin, and then make sure I get at least a 12-minute meditation in, which is, you know, totally made life so much more, you know, smooth and easy and peaceful. And, you know, I like who I am the most when I've meditated that day, you know, so it really is that simple. For whatever other reasons people meditate, it can be that very simple one. So, yeah, I'm not sure. There's always more I can say, Victoria.
Well, and you're just such a pleasure to listen to. So we know you're a vegan. Do you like to cook?
Oh, I love to cook. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I just made a video. I haven't put it up yet, but I'm doing this YouTube series called No Bones at All, which is conversations with my vegan friends and some cooking and some travel vlogging, because I was, you know, I have been on the festival circuit, you know, hopped on a few times there. And so I, you know, always looked for the vegan restaurants wherever, whatever city I happened to be in. So the first cooking video is me making I call it a butternut bisque with cashew cream and sage and cumin and vegan or lentil vegan sausage rolls. Using the original recipe from Vegan Rich's blog calls for puff pastry, but this time I just used a regular pastry, which has earth balance butter and vegan egg in it. And I always add, you know, garlic powder and dried thyme and oregano, maybe some onion powder to make it a nice savory crust. And that lentil, you know, walnut filling is just so, it's got a truckload of amazing spices, like in perfect harmony. And it's just one of my favorite fall dishes. So there will be a video coming in which I prepare those two meals. And yeah, I love to cook.
And tell me about this then, your video making. I was scrolling through the big channels and Dr. Phil was on, and I just caught enough for him to say, during the pandemic, we were making national TV shows with a phone propped up against a cookie jar.
Yes.
And I'm thinking the rest of us do that just as a matter of course. So tell us about making videos, especially cooking videos. Do you have some brilliant friend who holds the camera, or how do you do that?
No, I'm doing it all on my own, which it does take, I think it takes more time that way. I have a tripod, I have a lav mic, and, you know, I make it work. It's time consuming. And so I do try to fit it in between steps of the novel writing process. So right now I told myself that I had to finish this revision before I sent it, or before I could go back to making this vegan cooking series that I had thought about. I got the idea, you know, over a year ago. My friend Heather gave me the idea. She was like, oh, you should call it No Bones at All. I was like, oh, that's hilarious. So it's been in my head for a long time. I've been taking notes for it. I don't try to, you know, get too precious with it and try to make it look super professional, because I'm not a professional, you know, and I hope that, you know, folks, I think they do appreciate that it's just one person in their living room or in their kitchen. You know, and my kitchen is not, it's just this, you know, dark, small galley kitchen. And I just make the best of what I have. And, you know, I think that's plenty good enough for my purposes.
I love it. I can hardly wait to start watching. So you're No Bones at All on YouTube. And where else will we find you online?
I am actually, okay, so it's cometparty.com. And I'm trying not to spend too much time on social media, but I am at Comet Party on Instagram and Twitter. So I have been occasionally getting on. But yeah, the best place to find me is on my website, cometparty.com.
Wonderful. I wish you all the success with this movie and the new novel and the old novels and everything going forward. I know that you're just bringing so much light into this world, and it is an absolute joy and privilege to know you.
Thank you so much, Victoria. It's always a pleasure to be here with you.
Hey, listeners, I hope that you thought that was fabulous. I certainly did. It seems sometimes that these people with such great vision are voices crying in the wilderness, but the wilderness is getting closer to town. Don't you think that? Don't you see people waking up in the midst of everything that doesn't look so hot? There is so much awakening going on. So I just wanted to make a couple of announcements. We talked last week about the Ahimsa Ayurveda retreat that's going to be happening via Zoom this weekend. So that would be Saturday and Sunday, the 19th and 20th of November. The idea being a way to just self tear yourself to pieces using principles from the ancient Indian healing tradition of Ayurveda, and doing this in a fully vegan way and focusing on that whole concept of ahimsa, which is at the heart of being vegan for people who do that for ethical reasons, but it's also at the heart of yoga. It's yoga's first moral principle, and Ayurveda and yoga grew up together. So a couple of afternoons this weekend, 2 to 6:30 Eastern time, and you can get more information and sign up if you wish at tinyurl.com/ahimsa ayurveda. AhimsaIyurveda. And I'll put all that, of course, in the show notes, which you can find at victoriamoran.com. Now, we're having no episode next week because it is Thanksgiving, and just wishing you the most wonderful, wonderful time. So I hope that you're finding all sorts of things to feel a really deep gratitude about. And if there's any stress and tension around Thanksgiving, if you're going to be sitting around a table with people you're not altogether comfortable with at all times, or if they're going to be eating something or someone that you and I both wish they weren't, I just wish you peace with that, that you can see from heart to heart and love to love, and know that even with the stuff we don't understand, there's something pretty powerful going on here. And oh my goodness, we all get to be a part of it. Thanks so much for listening today. Now go out and be magnificent.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. You can learn more about Victoria or contact her at victoriamoran.com. Be part of her inner circle by joining the Victoria Moran Podcast Listeners Group on Facebook. And if you're a vegan looking to up your game, check out Victoria's acclaimed training and certification program, Main Street Vegan Academy, at mainstreetvegan.com.
Are you looking for help on your path to healing? I'm Lisa Campion. I'm a psychic, Reiki master, teacher, and energy healer. On my podcast, The Miracle of Healing, I'm going to help you on your healing path. Listen to conversations with leading teachers in energy medicine, quantum healing, and people who have recovered from loss and illness. Whether it's to take care of your own healing or to help other people, this is the podcast for you, right here on mindbodyspirit.fm.